Hi, Amélie Chevillet, and this is Queer Voices, the podcast that makes queer voices louder.
També no sé morir, també no cam. Jo escansi ti no cam. Pran cur me'n van. Prandai dhe mërzin vetëm me ty endaj. Vetëm ti më kupton mu pa fjall. Andaj të mbaj. Se nëse ti vjen, e nëse ti shkon, me smeje te asgjë s'ndryshon. E nëse ti vjen, e nëse ti shkon, me smeje te ti mos haro. Që të dua fort, fort, fort.
Today, I'm very happy to welcome Bessa Kasiu to the show. Bessa is a Balkan artist whose music blends Afrobeat, ballet and electronic vibes. Born in North Macedonia, shaped by Tirana's scene and now based in Germany, she writes and produces her own tracks. Music has been part of Bessa's life since childhood. But in 2019, she turned her passion into a profession, joining some of Albania's top studios and performing in competitions across the region. 2 years later, she received an award at a major festival in Montenegro. In 2024, Bessa pressed pause, stepping away from the spotlight to reconnect with herself and her purpose. That same year, she left the Balkans for love, because living openly as a queer person was never an option back home. Bessa is also passionate about tech and AI, and she brings a thoughtful perspective on generative AI in the music industry. Hi, Bessa. Thanks a lot for being here today. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for your invitation, and I'm happy to be here. And thanks for the wonderful introduction that you made.
You're very welcome. Want to quickly share who you are, your pronouns, and how you identify?
So, hi everyone, I am Bessa Kasiu, and I am gender fluid. I really like the word, and I think it fits me.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in Dibër, a city in North Macedonia near the border with Albania. As a kid, what was that like for you?
Well, the question caught me off guard a little bit because it's a really great question. And growing up with kind of two identities, I would say, because there's Dibër in Albania and Dibër in Macedonia, and you never really know where you really belong. You're Albanian, but you're in North Macedonia. You don't speak North Macedonian yet, but you must speak it because you live here. But the fact that I was always close to the border, I think it made me feel closer to home somehow and not separated. And I think people who have been through this, they understand how that feels. You really don't know where your home really is, but you just feel connected or like you want to go there. And I guess that's why later on I went to Albania and I lived in Tirana. Maybe that's what pulled me.
So it means that you're Albanian, but you lived in North Macedonia?
Yeah.
Would you like to share some historical background for people who don't know the region to better understand?
Yeah, that region was before Albania, and because of the war and that everything happened, it separated. So one part of Dibër became of North Macedonia and the other part is Albania. But for example, I have cousins that live in Dibër in Albania. You know, we're the same people, but we live in a completely different system.
Is the city very different from a country to another?
I think, yeah, there are a lot of differences. And it's the system, it's the mentality, it's first of all the language that, you know, it affects everything. And in North Macedonia is different because you live with Macedonians as well and Albanians. It's just more mixed, let's say. And in Albania, it's just Albania. That's all. And I think you feel more like home, like you belong to a place. And many people, when they ask me, like, where are you from? I tend to say I'm from Albania. But actually, in my passport, I'm not from Albania. I'm from North Macedonia. But I'm Albanian from North Macedonia. And yeah.
Did you grow up with siblings?
I did. My oldest sister, we were very close growing up, since our parents, they worked all the time, and I would say they were not very present in our life. Our grandmother was, and my older sister, we were very close because she was my sister. She was kind of like my parent also and my friend. So we created a very close bond, and we have like 3 years difference. And then later on, my youngest sister, she came to life. And yeah, we became three sisters.
Mm-hmm. Bessa, what does being queer mean to you?
I don't really know deeply yet what it means to me, because this is the first time that I have openly accepted myself being queer, and I'm still trying to find that out. But it just feels that I can be whatever I feel that I can be, and not being judged for that, and having my rights for that, because I think everyone deserves to have the right to feel the way they feel and to express themselves in a certain way. It's a long journey for me with that.
So would you say that it's a pretty new feeling for you?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I think it's a completely new feeling for me to accept it, to learn more about it, to get myself more educated in that. It's a world that I didn't allow myself to feel, and I am letting myself to finally feel that.
When did you first realize you were queer?
Oof, very, very young. I would say like 7 maybe. That's like when I knew, because I always felt attracted to my friends that were girls. So, and I was like, what's wrong with me? I didn't understand, because they were attracted to boys. And I always, for example, played with cars. I never liked Barbies, and I always loved the color blue, or I don't know, Spider-Man and stuff like that. Yeah, I think I just knew it, but of course I was a kid, so I didn't know the words and all of that. But later on, I think when I was 12 or 13, I started reading more about it, so I understood that. I said I'm a lesbian, and that's how I also came out to my parents, like, since back then, because I felt that I was different.
So you came out to your parents pretty early?
Yeah, I did. But of course, the mentality and everything, and my parents were like, that's just a phase and it will pass and everything, but it didn't pass. And I knew that it wouldn't pass, because it was just me.
Is it something that you shared with your friends too?
Not until later on, maybe like 15 or 16, that I started to express that more, because I was very scared that the people I love the most would leave me after that, or would think different of me. And so it took some time for me to open up, but my friends, they were really okay with that, especially my cousin, which I'm really close to till this day. He was like, I know you for a very long time, and for me, that's just who you are. This is you. It doesn't change anything. And it felt very reassuring. But I was never quite comfortable or confident enough to share that with everyone else, with the world, because I didn't want this label to not let people see me for who I really am. Yeah, I think I was always very scared of that.
Did you grow up with queer role models?
No, I don't think so. I think I was very alone in this journey, I would say. In this part of my life, I don't think that I opened up myself to people, to friends, to anyone. I just kept it to myself, and I just wrote a lot of songs. I expressed it through music, but I don't think I felt safe enough to express that with other people. Somehow I understood that everyone around me had a certain limit until what they can understand and how they can understand you, and I always adapted So I was very like adaptive, and even at school I could be friends with anyone, you know. For me that was not a problem, but I think I was adapting a lot, compromising a lot, and not really showing my true self and my true feelings and how I really think and what I really think about stuff.
And you said before that you were reading a lot about queerness. So would you say that the internet was your go-to place to educate yourself?
Yeah, so I was always a tech person since a very young age. And my father, he's also a tech person. So we had laptops and computers since back then. And he would always give them to me and I would play online and all of that. So I was in that world, and yeah, that was my go-to to understand what this is. And but in the internet, there were also a lot of bad stuff, let's say, like queerness is bad and it's a sin and all of that. Of course, you know, we're talking, I don't know, 2012. So it was my go-to. There were good information, but also very scary information to read at the time.
When you said that queerness was labeled as a sin, does your family have a religious background?
Yeah, so my family, they are Muslim. And of course, religion was part of us. I wouldn't say that much compared to other people in my town. But it was a factor, and a big factor for the queerness and how it's wrong, or how tattoos are wrong, and basically everything is a sin. So I grew up a lot with that feeling wrong, just feeling wrong, I would say. Mm. Yeah.
Bessa, what would you like to say to your younger self?
To my younger self, I would like to say that it is possible. And the life that I'm living now, the truth that I'm living now, is something I gradually started to believe that it will not be possible for me. And I just want to tell my younger self that it is possible, and it was meant for you to be here and to live your truth. When I look at my past and when I look how I was as a kid, it makes sense that one day I would explode, let's say, and live my truth, because it's just how I am. It's just me.
How important is queerness in your everyday environment?
It is important to feel connected, for me, to learn about queerness more. But I am gradually taking, like, step by step. You know, coming from a place where you feel queerness is so wrong, you kind of create this separation, and that's what happened for me. Even my closest people started to say, like, but you're different and they're different. So I created a separation between me and queer people. And even when I was in Tirana, which is way more open, I was just scared to be labeled or to be included in that, you know, and I really regret that. I feel sad that I had to feel that way for myself and for everyone in the community. So for me, this is now very new, and I'm like taking small steps, trying to go to workshops and just trying to learn more about it, to express myself more, to see what I really feel, who I really am, how I want to express myself, and creating the safe space for people to also be themselves. And to just be together, you know, be connected, be a community. I think that's important for me, but it's going gradually. I'm not overwhelming myself right now with too much, yeah.
Does the word community mean something to you?
For me, the word family meant community as well. But that was shaken the past year when everything happened. And so I'm trying to find the connection between that again, family and community. But I know that, you know, I was always a family person, and I wanted to be connected. I loved to connect with people. I was very extroverted at times and introverted at times. I'm just trying still to find the connection between family and community and creating that here in this new life.
You talk about 1 year ago when everything happened and about your new life now. Would you like to share a bit more about it?
I still cannot put it to words, to be honest, because it still feels very new, first of all. And I took a break from everything, as you know, from social media and everything. And this is the first time I'm talking about it, in a way, with you, with someone outside of my marriage. But everything escalated last year. I got married. I don't know, someone took that picture. The picture became, let's say, viral in my hometown. Everybody was gossiping about it. Everybody was shaming us, praying that at least we don't have kids or too many things. And it was a very chaotic moment. And it's not that I wanted to hide my marriage. I wanted to get the professional pictures that we took, and I wanted to post them when I feel like it. And I felt like people just damaged my privacy with that because they didn't respect it. And I just know that in my life, people were into groups. The people who they knew but didn't say anything about me, and the people that just, they didn't believe that I was queer at all. And honestly, I was even kind of surprised why it became that big, because I think it was very obvious that I was queer, but they don't care about that. They care that you shut up about it, that you just hide it. And I did that for a very long time, but I didn't want to do it anymore. And I got married to a very wonderful person. It just didn't feel right for me. It didn't feel right for me, even though it was very, very scary, because I knew that everything was going to blow up, and I knew that I had to leave everything that I had built and everything behind to create this new life. But in the end, this is my truth. This is who I am, and that's all I needed to know. And I got disappointed a lot, and my family for not really standing up for me. And I just saw that I was alone. I was alone from the people that I expected to not leave me. But I also found people that gave me a lot of love in the, like we said before, community and family. And I started to create that. People that I didn't talk to a lot or was not connected that much, but always when I met them, we were very close. They stood up for me. So I got messages also from people from my hometown, which really made me feel really good. And that's also one of the reasons why I do want to go back again, but when the time is right. And right now, I still don't feel that it's the right time to open up a lot about everything, because there are so many details into that. And I'm not ready to connect with so many people yet, because it was just a lot for me. And I think people really miss to see my side of the story, because in our culture, it's always about the parents. It's always about how they feel. It's always about them having a lot of support. And I think my parents did have a great support system during that time. And I'm happy for them. But I didn't have that support system. I needed to build that. And I don't think they see that. That's why it needs time to be back. It needs time for me to talk about everything and how it really made me feel and how it really affected me and us. My marriage as well, because it affected my marriage as well. And yeah, it's big, but I guess not everyone sees it that way. And that's okay. I just put my boundaries and my limits, and I think that was beyond my limits. I just had to do it, and I did it. I really did it. I'm very proud of myself for that, because I really stood up for myself, and I really did everything I needed to do. It was not easy to come to Germany. It was not easy to do all of the visa processes and everything. During that time, which was the most stressful time in my life and the most disappointing time of my life, I needed to learn German and so many other details. And I still did it. I still did it. Until this day, 1 year later, I'm still doing it. And I'm still living a very good life here. I found myself. And for that, I'm really proud of myself. I'm very resilient. And also my partner, she's also very resilient, that she held my hand through all of this. I really admire her for that.
Thank you for sharing this.
Thank you for asking.
Does that mean that you haven't been able to go to your hometown since your marriage?
Yeah, I haven't been able to go there. I'm not ready to go there. It feels like, you know, people who flee their country and you cannot go back. That's how I feel. And it's hard. It's the first time that I accept that I'm homesick. Time to time, I get homesick and I miss also a lot of things. I need a lot of things from there. Yeah, you want to be connected with your hometown. You know, you want to be accepted. You want to visit. You want to have the freedom to do that. It's just understandable. And not being able to, it's difficult. And I see it in small things. For example, I still haven't found the espresso that I'm looking for. You know, the coffee that I always drank when I was in my hometown. It's just small things that become more visible that you just miss.
Do you also miss the language?
I wouldn't say I miss the language because I'm happy that I talk with my wife in Albanian and also in our dialect because we come from the same hometown, which is crazy. But it's a blend. It's a blend of English and Albanian. But she makes me feel like home in so many levels because we understand each other, because we know where we come from. We know our families. We are very connected with our families. Like, my family knows her family, your family knows mine. It's just very interesting. But that's something we share, and it gives us comfort, both, because we both miss our hometown. I know that she also misses it. And I think it's good that we have this in common and that we can talk about it and just create this space for each other.
Mm. Bessa, what do you love doing?
Before, I loved making music. I really, really loved working on a project and getting everything ready, just working on the production, the lyrics. Oh, absolutely. I love that so much. Meeting people, connecting with them. And my plan was to release songs every month, but I had to stop that. And right now I really love reading a lot about tech, about psychology, and just getting myself informed. Reading about queerness. So learning. I love to get myself educated in different fields.
What inspires you?
People. People inspire me. The stories of people, connecting with them, talking to them, creating the safe space. That's the biggest source of my inspiration.
You've worked with top studios and performed across the Balkans. What's something about that chapter of your career that still shapes you today?
I had the privilege to be in some very known studios, and I learned how the industry works there. And I think that also kind of gave me the answer of why I really don't want to fit in that industry. Doesn't feel real for me, and it's very commercial. But it just taught me a lot about management, like how to manage yourself as an artist, how things work, and how music is done, how they record, you know, this very small stuff. I think it really helped me understand the industry better, and therefore that helped me understand myself better, how I want to fit. Or do I even want to fit in this industry? How do I want to express myself? And I see that I also try to fit into that, and I don't want to do that anymore when I come back. I want to be my even more authentic with my music and how I express myself. And I think that's something the industry back there doesn't do very well.
You said that you don't want to be part of this industry anymore. What made you realize that?
Because I was tolerating so many things. When I was going to interviews, there were so many stupid questions, like provoking questions. Where do you cut your hair? Do you go to a barber? Or do you go to like a friseur? Like, you know, or why do you want to dress like that? Do you think the way you dress is going to make you famous in this industry? Because I wasn't showing my body, like showing off. I don't know why I even tolerated that. But young, you have a vision, you want to push, but that's so stupid and so superficial. I really can't. Mm. And those are just small things. To not mention the way they work, the work ethic is just shit. Everything is done without a contract and nothing is clear. People can lie to you. There's no copyright law there. They're not familiar with that. It's a complete mess. It's more about showing off and being something. And I just want to be. I don't want to be something. And I think that's what I realized. But I had to go through that, all of that shit, to come to this point and to say, like, I'm never going to settle for that. And I can't remember an interview that they asked me, like, really meaningful questions, like, to really get to know me and to really get to know my music. It was just very, it felt very staged. And I felt like I also acted with that, you know? It became like a performance. And because back at the time, I was not open with my queerness, and whenever they asked those questions, I just knew how to answer them, how to shift that, to not show my true self. And that's sad, to be in a room with someone who makes you feel so uncomfortable, for you to not share your true world, to ask you where you cut your hair. Like, because back home, if you're a girl, you don't go to the barber to cut your hair. And for me, I didn't care. I went to the barber. And I really liked my answer back then, because I said, I do go to a barber, but my barber is a woman. Because she really was, and she's really unique. I also loved the style she had and the courage she had to just, like, be a woman, a barber working in a barbershop. And yeah, I just remembered now that was my answer. But it's just provoking. Why do you do that? Whatever. It doesn't fit with me anymore. I'm really happy I realized that.
During those interviews, do you think that was a way to try to corner you and, like, to come out?
Of course. It was a way to provoke you, to maybe let you talk more about that and just put a label then, you know, just like a clickbait or something. And it's sad.
You took a break from music and social media in 2024. What made you press pause, and what did that space open up for you?
I took a break in December 2024 in New Year's Day. First of all, it was very spontaneous. And the reason why I did it was that I didn't want anyone to write to me, to text me during New Year's saying congratulations, because I was so disappointed from so many people. And I said, that's just so fake for me to text me during that time and to just say Happy New Year to me. So I just wanted to disconnect from everyone and take a pause and reflect with myself and step back. And I'm really, really happy I did that. And I'm really happy that I'm still in that process. But I think that was my main drive, because it didn't feel real for me. And I knew that people would do that. People that were close to me or whatever. And I didn't want to fuck with that anymore. That's how I feel.
So you mean after you came out?
Yeah. So I came out in November 2024 when we got married. And in December, then I decided to step back and take time to find myself, go through this process, and just be with my wife and with people that created a safe space for me. And there were people like that, and with them I did keep contact. Of course, there's a lot of things that I could say, and right now it's not coming because it's this big baggage that I'm still unpacking. There's a lot of things, a lot of emotions going on there, but the core feeling was that it felt right for me to do it that way and to have the space, and I really deserved to have that space and that privacy.
Is it also the moment where you decided to stop doing music?
When I decided to stop doing music was in June 2024. So it was before, because the tension, let's say, started from then, but things were not public yet. And I felt that, something was about to happen. I needed to take a break because I couldn't keep up with my projects and with everything that was going on in my personal life. And I also didn't feel that I was resonating with the projects that I was creating because I was still in this old energy, let's say. And meanwhile, I was transitioning to this new energy, coming to this new world, experiencing Germany, being open here, and so many things were happening, and it was just the right decision to respect my music, respect myself, and to take a pause.
You've said that everyone back home knew you were queer, but no one talked about it. What did that silence do to you?
It made me feel alone. It made me feel ignored. It made me feel like I had to shut up for everyone. Like I had to eat things for them so everyone is happy, stable. I felt like this bomb in the family, in the town. And that's a responsibility that's not mine, that I took for so many years. And it's just not right to do that. And I'm really sorry for myself that nobody has apologized to me for that. And I'm so sorry for myself that I had to keep all of that. Because I am the one today who has to do all of that unlearning to free myself from those chains that I put myself in to make everyone else comfortable. And nobody should be put in that position. And to mention that I was a kid, because I was very young, I don't know, I can't imagine that for my kid. Even if you think that your child is sick or you don't agree or whatever, why would you let them keep all of this burden? It was a burden for me for years. And of course, one day I would have exploded because nobody can hold that for the rest of their lives. There are actually people that do that, but I don't think they're happy. I don't think they feel connected. And I wanted to experience the feeling of being truly connected with the ones that decided to stay and to love me for who I am. And there were people, even if they are not a lot, but there were. And I was happy and I'm grateful for those people.
So it means that your parents actually knew you were queer, but they forced you to keep silence so that people won't talk about it.
I would say it was not forced, but they really had that belief that it was just a phase. And they really believed that the compromise of hiding it was the right thing to do. And that was very hurtful for me because it meant again that I needed to swallow to keep everyone comfortable again. And consciously or unconsciously from their side, it still affected me. And I mean, coming from the place that we come from, living in that mentality, I also understand that part, that overwhelm, because they as parents have to take all of the shame. You know, there's a lot of shame going on there. But at the same time, even though I know that it was overwhelming for them as well, shameful, all of these emotions going on for them too, I feel like when it comes to parent-kid relationship, you need to show a standing for your kid. You need to be there, even if you think that it's wrong, even if you have different beliefs. And I missed that from them. And I think for me, that was a very, very big disappointment because I really admired my parents for so many things. I was close with them and I miss so many good memories with them. They are also very different people. But sometimes I think if you really live in that kind of community, it's just toxic and you forget yourself, you lose yourself. And I still don't understand it yet, why that happens. But my parents are also humans before they were parents, and they also have their own stuff. So in that perspective, I'm trying to understand, to put this into place, because I'm an adult now and I need to find peace with that too. But it's very difficult for me to understand, because no matter how old you are, you always feel like a kid with your parent. Like you always need your parents. You always need them to stand up for you. And during this period, I learned that like the biggest things, they are just words. Like, I'm proud of you. I want you to be happy. I want you to be yourself. These are words that touch you so deeply and you need them so much. You crave them so much, especially when you are in the position I was a year ago. You need that so much, but you're not getting it. And you need to learn to give that to yourself. You need to become that adult to yourself. You need to become that parent to yourself. And fuck, that's a long journey. It's a burden. It's a learning. It's a process. Unlearning. And so many things are merged into that. It's not easy. It's really not easy. But I always try to be fair. And I really, really want to see both sides of the story. I really want to see that. But right now, I feel like I am too hurt and I have so many emotions that I still need to put to place to be able to see these two worlds and to be fair to both parties.
You mentioned the mentality. Would you say that it was especially hard to be queer in your family and in the context where you were living, or is it not possible to be openly queer in Albania or North Macedonia?
I think in general it is hard to be queer in our hometown, but still the difference is the family, because when you have your family's back, when they stand up for you, there's still a difference. It's still tough. It's still difficult. You're labeled. There's a lot of gossip going on about you. It's just all of that will become normal. You will never feel fully accepted. But yeah, I think family does make a difference back home, because that's just the mentality. That's how we are. Big family, like tribes. But you also don't have any rights, so law is not with you. I think it's very difficult, and I'm really sorry for the people that are still hiding themselves, because I know that there are so many people also in my hometown that are queer. And I'm also happy that me and my wife, coming from the same hometown, basically making history, marrying from that town and like being public about it, I hope that gives someone the chance to see that it is possible. But I also understand that in my situation, I also kind of had a privilege, because I came to Germany. My wife, she was living in Germany. The rights here are completely different. So let's say I still had a smooth transition. But I know that for so many people, this is not the reality. This is not the usual. I'm really sorry for that, because I know that it is very, very difficult and very lonely. Very lonely.
Bessa, you are passionate about tech and concerned about AI-generated music. What are your hopes and fears when it comes to Gen AI in the creative world?
I'm really passionate about tech. I always loved it and I will love it. And I want to say that we are the people who control AI. So if there are the right people, the right AI will be there. But my concern is that, especially in the music industry with Udio and Suno right now, I don't know if they are the right people, because I feel that how the system and how everything is built and marketed, the artist, I feel like it's the very last person who benefits from that. And especially in music, in art, or in the creative world, I don't think we need that much tech. We need more connection. We need more authenticity. And I feel like we're going far and far away from that. One day, we will come back again. But right now, I feel that we're going far. We're just building unnecessary tools and making life, I think, also harder for artists. Of course, there's the other side where they like AI and AI-generated music and all of that. It's blowing up in Spotify also as well. Like, you don't know what's real anymore these days. That's how I feel. And I know that we would have technology evolving and we would have new tools and all of that. I understand. I'm not against it. But I just wish for us, for everyone, that we are not going far away from our authenticity, from our authentic self, from our true expression. Because for me, the music that is really deeply felt is created with people when you're together. Technology supports you, it helps you. But still, that emotion when you take that microphone, when you sing, for me, it's something very unique and valuable that I wish for us to not lose. And I really hope that people are aware of that. And the people that are running all of these companies and this initiative forward, that they are aware of that too. But right now, I have a hard time to trust that.
Did it happen to you already that you find some tracks on Spotify and like them eventually and discovered that they're AI generated?
I noticed them immediately because there's a specific sound to the voice, especially where I just know it's AI. And yes, it has happened to me that there was this cover of a song which was AI generated, and it was really nicely built, I would say, because they didn't just use an AI tool. They also used like post-production. They worked on it and everything, and it was really catchy and all. And yeah, it puts you in this hate and love relationship. It's strange, but it's happening. It's happening, and we need to find ways now to deal with that. And I'm also happy that law is also moving forward with that, to also not use the work of other people and not get them credited and all of that. But yeah, in the end, the music that I play, it's always a human that I want to listen to. And sometimes, yeah, I played that cover because it was nice, it was catchy. But we need to find a balance with that. People who are not able, for example, to make music, it can inspire them, it can offer them a chance to do that. Because right now I'm just looking at my perspective, and there are different perspectives, and we need to be open to listen to that as well and find a compromise with all of it. That's what I think. And with the right people, it will come. I'm just scared that the artists are not the main concern here.
Do you use any AI tools yourself in your creative process, or actively avoid them?
I have experimented with them, especially when Suno came out. I was experimenting with them and it was very interesting. I was like, wow, amazed and all of that. But I don't use them in my work because it's just not my process. And maybe in the future, when I start making music again and going back, I will start utilizing different tools. But right now, my process of making music is I just feel this emotion coming. I feel the lyrics that it's coming, and I just take my guitar and I just write my songs on a paper on my phone. And then from there, after some time, I take it to production, I add more elements, so it's a long process, and I like it. So that's okay for me. And if I needed an AI tool during that process, I'm open to try that, and I try to keep myself informed with everything that's happening.
Actually, when did you start doing music?
I was 12, I think that's when I started making music. I had the plastic guitar, and then I bought a real guitar, and from 13 I started to write songs, first in English and then mostly in Albanian. Because I had a teacher in high school, my music teacher, and she would always tell me, like, try to write in Albanian too. And I tried it, and I really love that. I really like to express myself in Albanian. It just, of course, it feels a lot closer and close to my heart. But since then, music never left me until June 2024. And now for a year and a half, I'm having such a hard time to write a song for the first time in my life. I haven't written a song. I have so many projects that still I can work on. I'm good with that, but I can't yet express myself again in music, and it makes me a bit sad, but I trust that I will go back and I will get there again once I feel more calm and feel like I found my space here. Because to be creative, you also just need to be. You need to just rest through the day and just, I don't know, get into that mood. At least that was my process. And right now I have to get used to a new life, a new routine, a new place, and I guess I need time for that, yeah.
If you could design the perfect space to be fully yourself, musically and personally, what would it look and feel like?
It would be somewhere in a forest, maybe close to the lake, like a house vacation home, cozy with a fireplace and just not having to think about anything, disconnected from the world, no social media, no news, no nothing. Being with the people that I love, my wife, my friends, family that I have here, and just having that time with them, talking, playing games, maybe exchanging stories, working on a new project. I think that is a kind of coziness and space that would allow me to calm down. I try to do that time to time, to feel that space again. Not yet in this vacation home that I like, but definitely plan to do that. Especially I always think of Norway. I really like Norway. Going to a place like that and just being on airplane mode.
Bessa, what is it like for you to live in Germany as a queer person?
So far, it has been good. I'm happy. And of course, because I compare that to where I come from, that's something we should keep in mind. Of course, it's not perfect. I see that there's a lot of things that need to change and a lot of things that we still need to continue to fight for. But definitely there's a lot more freedom and less judgment, at least in my personal experience here, that I could just be myself and not be scared to show myself, to express that. I'm still learning though, but I'm happy that I had a good experience, not only with my queerness, but in so many aspects like a foreigner. I have had some really great experiences. I felt welcomed.
Okay.
There are aspects which I don't feel welcomed, but most of it was positive, I would say. My whole process went very smoothly, so I'm really grateful for that. But also because me and my wife, we really like went after that. We tried to do everything right when it comes to the documents and all of that. So that gives you an ease of mind. And I would say I also have the benefit that my wife speaks German. She's a German citizen. And that really makes a difference when it comes to all of these documents and all of this stuff, which is really, really frustrating. And you don't have a lot of information. So I'm happy for that. But I know that that's not the usual for a lot of people. It's just my experience.
Is there anything you wish for queer people in Germany or in the Balkans?
I wish that they always have the optimism and hope and will, mostly the will, that they can really be themselves, they can find themselves. And that comes when you connect to your inner world and when you start accepting yourself for who you are and for what is your truth. The question that I asked myself coming from where I come from was, what is your truth? What's the real thing behind things? And when you answer that, but like really answer that from your heart, you will find the answers and you need to follow that. You need to move. So I really wish for them that they have the courage and the will to take that road and to live their truth. But I know that it's not easy. It's very difficult to do that. Because deep down, you know that you have to leave everything behind. You just have that gut feeling. And when you have that gut feeling, understand that it's not the right environment for you. It's going to hurt you in the long run. And sooner or later, you will regret not taking that decision sooner. At least that's also what I say to myself. I wish I was out sooner. I wish I lived my truth sooner and that everything is going to be okay. But when you are in that state, you really don't feel that or see that because you've been given all of this baggage and all of this responsibility that you just see no way out. There's no way out for you. And nobody is thinking about that. It's just something that you carry while you function in the system. And that is very, very present back home for us. And I know that there are queer people, at least that I'm aware of, from my hometown, and I also really wish that for them. And I think about them sometimes, how it is for them to be in that position, to to take that step. But I understand it. I don't blame them for hiding or for bending yourself or whatever that is. It's understandable, but I don't think you can live that way. I don't think you can live a healthy and happy life like that in the long run. Because it will come out. It will come out.
Bessa, is there anything else you'd like to share in this podcast?
I just want to share something which was really interesting before I met my wife. I wrote a song in English, I think 2 months before meeting her. And it's crazy because I describe everything, how everything happened. In the song, I say, I changed flights, I stayed longer because I caught feelings for you all over in a different country and different culture. But now nothing matters. And then I say, with you, I feel like home, feeling so warm and feeling so known. I don't feel alone. I finally feel like home and I finally found you. And it's so crazy because that's what I did. During that time, I needed to go to Norway to a Music AI conference. And my stop was in Munich. But I changed my flight and I stayed longer. And that was the song that was next to be released. And I wanted to give a hint of my queerness in that song because I recorded, it was June, so it was queer, like all of the flags and everything. And I took videos of that and I wanted to release that song. And it still amazes me through this day because when I met her and when we got together, I just knew that she's the one. And I guess with this, what I want to say is that I'm very thankful that I have her in my life and that she stood by me when I basically lost everything. And I'm really happy that now that I'm in a much, much better position, like since I came to Germany, everything was gradually just going up and up. And I was feeling good in so many areas of my life. I found myself very quickly here. I'm very thankful that she is the one that's on my side. Because with her, I feel like everything is always better. I really like her presence. Yeah, she deserves all of these words. I feel like she's a very wonderful human. I like her not only as my partner, my wife, but I like her for who she is. And she's a big part of this journey for me. She was a very, very big part. She was my safe space and my biggest anchor when I needed it the most. And it still surprises me till this day because we were still getting to know each other more, you know, but with her, it felt like I know her. So yeah, I'm very thankful for that. I think she's a blessing in my life with everything that went on in my life. All the traumatic experiences that I've experienced, it's just all worth it because I know that I'm going to make it. I have that trust. But I'm also very thankful for her and for the people that I've created, the bond, this safety, this little tribe here that is finally, finally true and real, authentic. I'm very grateful for that.
I also think she's a wonderful human and I'm sure she will hear your message.
I try to always say these things and maybe an advice for everyone. Just tell the people that you love, always that you love them, how much they mean to you, how much they meant to you, how much you care, because these words just touch you in a completely different way and they are needed. We need to hear them, so please do that. Maybe take the chance now to do that.
Bessa, before we wrap up, how about a quickie? Don't worry, it's not about sex. It's just a rapid fire round of questions.
Ooh.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
The quality you appreciate most in someone else?
Reflection.
Your greatest quality?
Accountability.
What makes you happy?
Eating spaghetti with tomato sauce and feta.
Something that made you proud lately?
How I am handling my very, very busy schedule.
A song you love at the moment?
It's a song called Come In by Johnny. It's a Russian song.
Someone you find hot.
My wife.
A content you'd recommend.
Difficult to answer because I don't know who to trust anymore online, but trust your gut.
One big wish you have.
To heal every day through this journey, to be healthy and myself.
And your mood right now?
I'm happy.
Thank you so much, Bessa, for your time and for helping make queer voices louder.
Oh, that's so nice. Wow, that's a really nice ending. Thank you so much for this, for creating the safe space for me. I've never spoken to anyone in this way, especially like, you know, in a podcast, in an interview context. But I'm really grateful that you're doing this. I think it's really important. And I just feel like I got that safe space, but also feeling held. And I really, really wish you a lot of success because I really like your work ethic and I really like how you made me feel. And I wish that I expressed myself how I could express it, but that's also a big part because you made me feel comfortable and you gave me that space to do so. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Bessa, for your words.
Of course.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ayo posilecí kurm kaharu na 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 ha kurto mushu meta shuru na 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 ha enu keti ay kamyaftu na 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 ha chizemrun time kapustu na 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 ha chizemrun time. Na 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 ha, që zemrën ti me kapushtu.